The date is September 26th, 2003, and we're watching The Rundown. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Pep than usual. I like it. Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the back to my Declan.
I thought you were going to be like, I'm the thunder to your lightning.
Oh, it was right there. Take two, man. Yeah. With me, as always, is the thunder to my lightning.
Cha-ka-cha! Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
Oh, that's so much better. Yeah, I decided not to throw the Sean William Scott character in there because I like Declan so much in this movie. That's why I chose that. Well, this week, we brought back a special guest because right now, Colin and I are doing our road to 100. We're in the home stretch to our 100th episode, people. And so we brought in one of our favorite guests, our old friend, this sixth time, I believe, Mr. Frank Driscoll.
Hello, Sean. Hello, Colin. Yes, it is time number six. I have a little wall in the background with my chalk, and I draw each line every time I come on.
Keeping tally marks on us. I love it.
But as always, it is great to be here. Thank you for inviting me to discuss this film.
Always a pleasure to have you, Frank. Absolutely. So this week, we are looking back at September 2003, when the movies and theaters were Once Upon a Time in Mexico, Cabin Fever, Under the Tuscan Sun, Dickie Roberts, former child star, and of course our movie for today, The Rundown, which earned, ooh, so close, $80.98 million on an $85 million budget.
What?
Yeah.
I can't believe it did that poorly.
Uh-huh.
I mean, $80 million is not anything to slouch at, but still, I'm shocked that this movie wasn't like a box office slam.
Yeah, I will happily take that $80 million and put it in my pocket. I'm not going to complain about $80 million, but 100% I agree that, like, I actually went to, like, three sources to double-check this number because I wanted to make sure, really, like, was there something lost in the translation about North American versus worldwide? But no, 80.98 is the most I could find worldwide for this movie, so... Yeah,
this is one where I'd be curious to know, like, the like how many theaters it was in, I wonder how wide of a release it got, because it's still like, I mean, it's interesting to think about now, The Rock being The Rock, but like this is early stages of his acting career when he's still The Rock, but people still kind of, he was The Rock the Wrestler, not Dwayne The Rock Johnson
exactly.
Action star.
Yeah, like his credit on this movie is The Rock. I mean, we're talking Rock, comma, The, if we're seeing his driver's license, you know?
I wonder if that was on his SAG card when he first entered Hollywood.
Oh boy, I hope so.
I kind of hope so, too.
As always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want to get, you know, tossed off a cliff and beat up by some Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighters or, whipped by the whipping boys, as I like to call them, then please hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the taglines that appear on the poster for this movie, I found three. Not very exciting, though, this week, gentlemen. First, we've got Cut to the Chase, September 26th.
Eh.
Nah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, okay. The second is Bulls, Guns, Whips, Gold, and One Sacred Cat.
Yeah.
I mean, those things are all there, but that doesn't really speak to the action comedy of the movie. It makes it sound more like an Indiana Jones flick.
It leans into that side of it, absolutely. Well, the third, I mean, you knew something like this was going to be coming. Welcome to Rock Solid Entertainment.
Okay. With all the like refrigerator talk and kitchen talk in the movie, I'm surprised they just didn't go with "You smell what the Rock is cooking."
Yeah.
that
man,
it was right there, just like thunder and lightning. How did I miss it? Well, they may not be the best descriptions of this movie, so let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
Beck the Bounty Hunter wants nothing more than to leave his people-chasing, ass-kicking days behind to pursue his dream of becoming a restaurateur. When his boss, Billy, sees that his hired hand wants out, he agrees to cut him loose provided he takes on one last rundown for him. His son Travis, a university dropout who's been busy hunting treasure in South America. After arriving in El Dorado, Brazil, Beck finds Travis but runs afoul of local kingpin Cornelius Hatcher, who wants Travis and his knowledge of a hidden artifact, O Gato do Diablo, aka the Devil's Cat, for himself. With Hatcher and his men on their tail, Beck, Travis, and local bartender Mariana must find the Gato so that she can turn it over to a group of rebels and liberate the people of Hell Dorado from Hatcher, and Beck can return to Travis to the States and liberate himself from Billy. That is your 60-second synopsis.
Right on. You really leaned into the Hell Dorado. I love it. Apparently, that was one of the possible titles for this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I added it.
Yeah, and so was Welcome to the Jungle, which...
Yeah, I think that Welcome to the Jungle is its name in a few countries.
Yeah,
oh, really?
Yeah, in a few foreign releases, it got that name. And now everyone's confused because Jumanji came out with the same title.
Oh, yeah.
So now, with the rundown, this is one that I guess I was one of the people that didn't help the $80 million. I saw this on video the first time I saw it, or DVD the first time I saw it. I had a passing fondness for someone like The Rock, and I enjoyed it. And, of course, Sean William Scott was big off of his American Pie fame. And so I was more going to this the first time seeing it as a Sean William Scott movie that happened to have The Rock in it. And then you get the passing of the torch from Arnold Schwarzenegger to The Rock, and you knew that, okay, this is the next big action star. So I have a bit of a history with The Rundown. I like this movie. I've always liked this movie, but, you know, no huge nostalgia story to go with it. Now, Frank, when I reached out to you, I gave you a couple of options of movies to see, and you chose this one. You said it sounded fun, and you said you had never seen it. So we have yet again found a movie that you have never seen.
Yes, and also in a sense, compared to the other movies that we've discussed on the program with me, this is not only one I have not seen, but is one I have not even heard of until you told me about it.
Unacceptable.
So this is literally a fresh look,
okay.
Literally. Wow. Because, you know, I've always been a big wrestling fan, so I know a lot about The Rock, and I know how he's become one of the biggest stars in Hollywood, and I know that around this time, 02, 03, was when he was starting to go away from the ring and in front of the camera, and I have never heard of this movie at all, not once.
Okay.
So I was excited to watch it.
Now, from the same era, Walking Tall. Have you ever seen that one? Or heard of it? No, okay.
No.
Okay, that
have
is another...
Have you ever seen The Tooth Fairy? Or The Game Plan?
The Game Plan, yes. My grandmother actually really enjoyed that movie. So I've seen it a few times. Tooth Fairy, that one kind of sucked. I mean, but no offense to The Rock, but... Yeah. I don't want to be on the receiving end of the people's elbow.
There you go.
Those were dark times.
Yeah.
The Disney years. Yeah, Escape from Witch Mountain as well. Now, okay, so you mentioned the wrestling side of it. How are you when it comes to The Rock as a movie star? Are you a fan of Dwayne Johnson movies?
Oh, very much so.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a great actor. And you could tell just based on his, you know, in-ring promo ability being a wrestler that he could have been one in the first place. And sure enough, he was. He fits a lot of roles.
Yeah.
He really does.
Yeah.
On paper, you wouldn't think he would, but he does. Okay. And I think over the years, they experimented with other wrestlers. Like, they tried to make movies with Hulk Hogan. and other
Mr.
people
Nanny
like that.
And what was the other one? Suburban Commando.
Yes.
What about, don't forget Three Ninjas.
Oh yeah.
Three.
Knuckle up.
Four.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that I think that's why they hadn't really looked at wrestlers being as a success in the world of film, but The Rock, I think, took that and threw it out the window.
And showed that it was possible, because I will say that I also love the shit out of a John Cena property. Like, the Peacemaker, I mean, come on, right?
I admit to that, too.
And same with Batista. I love Batista, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We need to bring Frank back to watch the John Cena classic, The Marine.
Yeah. I remember when that came out. You know, you watch the wrestling show every week. That's all you saw. The Marine. They promoted it like crazy.
Yeah. So other than the couple of early The Rock movies, when he was still going by The Rock rather than Dwayne Johnson or Dwayne The Rock Johnson, other than those ones, then you're kind of familiar with his filmography outside of that, then you'd say.
Yes.
Okay. Colin, what about you? What kind of history do you have with The Rundown? I'm sure, because I know how much you love wrestling.
Yeah, I would have been one of the, you know, I would have been one of the people who contributed to that 89 million, for sure. 80.9. I remember driving to the Peace River Theater to watch this movie when it came out, and I was super excited. Like, I just remember, like, 2000 to 2004 was the height of my wrestling love affair. Mm-hmm. It was all I watched on TV, pretty much. And so, like, I didn't even really like The Rock as a wrestler, but I loved him as an actor. Mm-hmm. And I always, like Frank said, I've always appreciated his, even when I didn't really like him, I probably wasn't supposed to like him, and I have always appreciated his mic skills. But, mm-hmm. I mean, The Rundown for me is, like, to be honest, I would put The Rundown and Walking Tall up against any of The Rock's, like, current movies.
Yeah.
As two of his best, I think.
I would agree.
Like, I think mm-hmm. they're both phenomenal movies, and I think if he would have stayed in that vein, because it is very similar to what he's doing now, and not gone the Disney route and tried to change his image to family friendly, I think his filmography would only be even like more substantial and better. But another argument could be made that he kind of had to do that to, you know, show a little bit of range. And, you know, I think The Rock will forever hold a place in history as being the person who did break through from wrestling to movies and show that it can be done, and that, you know, wrestlers not like aren't just going to be the Hulk Hogans or the Roddy Pipers and that kind of stuff. So
Yeah. Roddy Piper. Nice. Nice pull. Well, let's jump into The Rundown. Directed by Peter Berg, produced by Mark Abraham, Bill Corliss, and Karen Glasser, and Kevin Mischer, and a shout out to executive producer Vince McMahon, obviously.
Mm-hmm. And recently retired Vince McMahon.
Yes.
Congratulations on your retirement and your $3 million settlement. So there you go.
And written by RJ Stewart and James Vanderbilt. And so we open this movie on a radio switching from music to talk about porcini mushrooms. And we see The Rock taking notes on the mushrooms. And there I have in my notes, we get to smell what The Rock is cooking. So, you know, Colin and I were on the same page with this.
Yes.
It's so weird to see him with hair.
Yeah, it is, to be honest. And like not so huge.
Yeah, not so huge. And is it just me, but does he seem a little blacker in this movie? Like, he seems darker than he does in a lot of... like, you know, I really see the African-American side of him in this movie rather than the Samoan side, which I see now that he's full bald and majorly jacked.
Yeah, I get that, too. He definitely, his skin definitely looks darker for whatever reason.
Yeah.
It was kind of similar in The Scorpion King when we watched that a few episodes back.
Yeah. So, yes, and he goes into the club, and of course, we get the Arnold Schwarzenegger cameo, which just happened to be like a lucky thing, apparently, because he was there shooting. He was on the same lot shooting a Super Bowl ad or something like that. And and they're like, hey, you want to be in this movie? And he's like, well, as long as you can get me out of here by noon. And so, we get Arnie walking by saying, have fun.
I remember that being such a big deal, like the WWE specifically and all their promotion of the movie, making that like such a big thing, this passing of the torch from like the action star of the 90s to the action star of the 2000s.
One thing I find funny about this movie is because we get the whole opening of this movie in this club, and this movie is very locked into a few different trends that were happening in the early 2000s. Like, so the first is this opening bit where he's talking about all the different football players that are down on the dance floor. And they're cutting to, like, clips of football, which, interestingly, are XFL clips.
Right.
Which I find great.
I noticed that while watching it. I noticed the logo for the Las Vegas team and other things. I was like, oh, yeah,
exactly.
Which The Rock now owns the XFL.
Oh, okay. I didn't know the XFL still existed.
What happened was, 2001 was like when the XFL started, 2 years before the movie came out, and it was a big failure. They lost all this money. 2019, Vince McMahon decided to bring it back, focus more on the football element and other things. And it was a success in the beginning of 2020. Then they had to stop playing because the virus came out.
What virus?
And all that other stuff.
What are you talking about? I haven't heard of a virus. What? Yeah.
I wish. Well, then, but then after that, I guess he decided to sell it because he didn't really think what else he could do. So then The Rock ended up taking it.
Okay.
And now The Rock is in charge. They should go back to playing sometime next year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah. So where I was going, though, with this opening that's showing these XFL clips is they also bring up the graphics and the stats of people on the screen. And it's fun because it's something that a lot of 2000s movies did, was having graphics on the screen.
Right.
But it's only used in this opening bit, and that kind of disappoints me because the style of this movie, I noticed, changes many times.
Explain.
Well, I mean, we get to the jungle, and all of a sudden everything becomes all about wire fighting, which was another early 2000s trend. So now all of a sudden we've got Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, right? And then all of a sudden we turn into an Indiana Jones movie when they're going through the temple and have to figure out the puzzle of how to get through to the El Gato. You know, it's just, I find that it goes from, like, you know, this movie with this very sinister bad guy in Christopher Walken, and then all of a sudden it becomes this, you know, upbeat kind of goofy thunder and lightning, help me pee, take my dick out kind of humor, or don't let the thing swim up your ding dong, you know. And then it goes into, like I said, Indiana Jones. Like, it just, I don't know, it just flops back and forth between several different styles in this movie. It doesn't seem consistent. It feels like it could have had several different things directed by several different people.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, like, I agree with you on, now that you mentioned, I can see it. I was going to say it's similar on, like, a story point. The movie is relatively short, I feel like. This is a rare thing for me to say, but I almost feel like adding a half an hour to maybe flesh out more of the search for the Gato could have added a lot to, like, kind of making it a more concise narrative.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, I'm a fan of every one of the styles that was happening. You know, I liked Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, so I was all there when the wire fighting came out and the impossible, like, kicks in midair were happening to The Rock. But, you know, it's just like, you know, I love me an Indiana Jones movie. So, like, I don't hate it in this movie, but it is weird in this movie, right? It doesn't make me hate the movie at all. Is all I'm saying. But yeah, it's very inconsistent. But I love this opening bit with the stats and him taking out all the football players that think he's just there for an autograph.
Yeah.
You know, I did notice that pattern because, you know, when I first looked at when I was looking up the film, like, just to see if it says buddy action comedy film. And halfway through, I was like, Well, I get the buddy part. I get the action part. The comedy's here, then it's not there, then it's there again, then it's not there again. It's like, huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I get exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, part of that is because Declan disappears. I mean, Declan is a big source of the comedy for some of it.
Yeah.
You know, because they tried to make Sean William Scott a little bit more serious in this movie. But Declan, the whole bit in the plane in the beginning with the duct tape wing and the cows on the... But he can't understand him saying cows. Like, it's just...
Booze in the grand!
Yeah, booze in the grand, yeah.
I love that. When he said, what, booze in the grind? What the...
Okay, so I want to talk about this fight, though. Because we've also got, like, pieces of concrete pillars being punched out and people being thrown into the concrete pillar and it's crumbling. First of all, the structural integrity of this club must be disappearing with every hit of this pillar. But it's just, how are they not walking away with broken hands?
Yeah, I was going to say, I noticed this and I remember thinking this as well when we watched The Scorpion King, but it's like, you can't, in a movie where everybody's supposed to be, like, semi-a normal human being, it's okay to be, like, an amazing fighter.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't be so superhuman that you're punching stone pillars into dust.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, like whatever, I can be on board with you taking out six, you know, 300-plus-pound super athletes, that's fine.
Mm-hmm, sure, yeah.
But, like, the idea of being able to punch through stone, I don't know. it loses me a little bit on that.
Well, you know what loses me? You know how much of a fan I am of sounds that don't make sense. You know, like the cat screeching, the perfectly timed cat, stuff like that. What I love in this one is when he gets pinned against the DJ and he throws the turntable up over his head, right? And the music stops, right? And then the guy starts running away and he hurls the record player at him.
Yeah, Captain America style.
Yeah, as it hits him, it does a record scratch. And it's just like, but the music already stopped and it's not plugged into anything. How is it still being amplified?
He's just that good.
He's just that good, yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah. It should have been Chuck Norris passing the reins onto The Rock, you know, because then he'd also embed him with his Chuck Norris magic powers.
Right.
So, yeah, he tries to collect his $50,000 and he doesn't do it peacefully like we just mentioned. So he ends up taking the ring by force and then the other bounty hunter, Martin, beanbags him and he goes all pissed off to see Billy. Don't you think he could just kick Billy's ass? I mean,
yes.
Yes.
The whole scene with the Martin, is that the other?
Yeah, yeah, there? Yeah.
That's like one scene of the movie where I just kind of felt like, why did this need to happen? Like, couldn't he have just shown up at Billy's all beat up, like all beat to hell and tired and just been like, I want out? Like, we didn't need that whole thing. And it's like a weird thing because it makes you expect that this guy is going to come back at some point later in the movie.
And he never
does.
Or at
least it did for me. And he never shows up. But there's no really any explanation about why he did that.
Yeah. And this is where I can see exactly what you're saying about, hey, yeah, let's throw us an extra 20 minutes, half an hour, and explain some of this. Like, they never even explain where The Rock learns to fight, do they? That, like, was back special forces? All we know is that when he picks up a gun, very bad things happen. That's all we know about him. Is just like MacGyver, he doesn't like a gun.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would have liked a little bit more backstory on him. Unless I missed something. I didn't miss that, right? That they explained.
No, he gives some story about, like, just basically that, like, you know, bad things happen when he has guns.
Yeah.
But he never, like, this is what I'm saying, where there's, like, an added, like, scene about, or an explanation about even his past. Like, clearly he grew up in a rough place. Like, I'm sure there were guns around, and maybe that has something to do with it.
Yeah.
But it's never fully fleshed out. And then cut to the end of the movie when all of a sudden, you know, I don't know, Frank, maybe you can enlighten us as our American friend, but it's like, to me, the message of the movie is that, like, guns save the day. Like, you would be nothing without your guns. Like,
thank God he picked up a gun.
Well, a lot of folks in this country really much affirm that statement.
Yeah.
Which is a bit upsetting in a way. But, yeah, when you put it that way, that's kind of one of the messages I got, too.
Yeah, because it would have been, like, it would have been a little bit more interesting. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the scene and where he's, like, you know, he's just one-handing these massive rifles because he's The Rock.
Yeah.
But I still, it would have been a little bit more interesting, and I think it almost would have, like, validated Beck's integrity a little bit. Like, I would have respected him a little bit more if he had found a way to manage without the guns.
Have either of you ever handled a shotgun? Is cocking a shotgun in your armpit possible?
I don't know that I've handled a shotgun. I've handled a larger rifle.
Yeah, I've handled revolvers.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I guess theoretically with a pump action like that, if you could squeeze it hard enough. And grab it right. But I mean, I'm pretty sure if you were to look at him, like, the way he does it, I'm pretty sure those cocking things are just sound effects.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know that there's any actual movement.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I always liked how in T2 he does the flip thing because of how, you know, those shotguns are. But yeah, cocking, I don't know how much pressure is needed on the pump because I've never handled one, but. So he gets the job to go one last job, and then he's out, of course, because every story like this needs that kind of message. You know, one more job. I'm going to do my last one. And yes, we end up in Hell Dorado with the lunatic pilot, Declan, and he gets a little bit of a lesson about bugs and poison frogs and anacondas and rebels. Just stay out of the jungle. You know, at least he understood that part if he can't understand anything else Declan is saying.
Yes.
So, like,
you guys are right. Declan, we could have used more Declan in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, even in the final battle, it's weird. It's weird that he's just sitting there, like, on the porch.
Well, he's got
basically running color commentary on the whole thing.
He's got dodgy knees, though, don't you know? So,
I guess.
Yeah. I was worried that something was going to happen to him. Like, there'd be an explosion, or there'd be one little thing, or something with a bagpipe in his mouth or something. I don't know. But I was just glad nothing did. And he could just sit there and relax and watch everything go down. And you need a good character like that to have that kind of role in that part. Because it makes you feel assured.
Yeah. So while Beck is busy trying to get himself landed and everything like that, we cut to Travis walking into a bar with flowers for the girl behind the bar. Mariana, Rosario Dawson. My God, I forgot Rosario Dawson was in this movie.
I didn't realize it was her.
I'm like, wait a second. Wait, is that Rosario Dawson? I mean, yeah, I was surprised.
Is this like her? Is this a debut role for her?
No, it's not.
It's got to be in very early.
Actually, no. She was a child actor. If you've ever heard of the movie Kids.
Okay. No.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, the movie Kids is a very disturbing mockumentary-style movie, and it shows some very terrible things that kids do, and it's kind of a disturbing movie.
Yeah, it was like rated X, right? Or something like that?
Something like that, yeah. Like, the scene where the 14-year-old gets raped because she passed out drunk, that was kind of where I'm like, yeah, I don't think I'll ever recommend this movie to anyone. But she was in that, and she was like 14 or something like that in that. I mean, this would have been somewhat early for her, I'm sure, but I've never thought about it. But yeah, he's trying to bribe her for a boat because he's looking for the Gatto. And then we just kind of cut to Christopher Walken, the unofficial leader of this town. I mean, you know, his I found out that his full name, because he's only ever called Mr. Hatcher, is Cornelius Bernard Hatcher. But, I mean, he's just Christopher Walken and his Christopher Walkenist.
Yeah, it's kind of, Christopher Walken is a pleasant addition to this movie, if ever there was one. Like, is he just, Like, I have to feel like this isn't a movie that I would really expect him to kind of, like, hit a home run in or even be up for.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, he's at his best in this movie, I feel like.
Yeah.
His line deliveries are just so clutch, and he's the perfect villain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Just even how he goes through, like, his speech of the Tooth Fairy.
The Tooth Fairy.
The Tooth Fairy.
Do you understand the concept of the Tooth Fairy?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And apparently that was originally going to be a speech about Winnie the Pooh being stuck in the hole. But Disney threatened to sue, so they changed it to a Tooth Fairy story.
I would have liked to have seen that.
Yeah.
Christopher Walken in that sense.
Yeah.
I feel like we all have to see that.
You know, I would love to sit down with Christopher Walken sometime. Like, I mean, that guy is probably just pure entertainment when you talk to him. Because he'd have so many stories. Like, I even read about him in this one. There's the one moment where he refers to his miners as Oompa Loompas. And he didn't want to say the word Oompa Loompa until the director gave him a copy of Willy Wonka because he didn't know Willy Wonka. And so he watched it, and then he's like, okay, I'll say Oompa Loompa now. And it's just like...
Wow.
That's just... To me, that's an odd story to hear about Christopher Walken. But it also kind of makes sense with his persona.
Yeah.
But yeah, Beck goes to him to show him respect because he's a visitor in someone else's house, and you don't reach into a refrigerator without permission. That's a good line.
They really try to drive home this refrigerator metaphor. Like, they really, really, really come back to it.
Yeah. 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 They definitely circle back to that one. But so Beck tracks down Travis in the bar, and we've got the whole banter about nuts, which is one of the things that I always loved in this movie. Oh, Brazil nuts. Well, no, down here we just call them nuts.
Yeah.
But once again, Beck brings up his, you can have option A or option B. And option A is always the, you come with me quietly. Option B is always, I make you come with me. But no, Travis isn't having that. He's proposing it in option C. Until Mr. Hatcher comes in to fuck everything up.
That's one of my favorite scenes when Hatcher comes in and he's like, you know, there's been a change of plans and all that. And then we get the whipping boys come in.
Yeah, the main whipping boy is someone we've seen before, too. He's John Grease, and we saw him in the Monster Squad way back when we did the Monster Squad.
Wow.
Yeah, he was the desperate man. He was the desperate man.
Oh, desperate man.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he's the one that ends up turning into the Wolfman, but he didn't actually play him as a Wolfman. He was only desperate man.
Is he the one that has the sweet scene of whipping through the chair and slicing it in half with the whip?
I'm not sure which one. He's the main guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Harvey is his character's name. So I don't know who whips through the chair. I don't remember. But can a whip go through a chair?
That was going to be my question. Is like, I'm watching this movie, I was very curious about the power of a whip.
Yeah.
If you can whip through a chair, isn't it possible then that if you whip somebody around the neck that you might just decapitate them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that happened in Batman Returns. But meanwhile, Beck can catch a whip, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't that have sliced his hand off, though?
Probably. Probably.
If they can go through a chair.
Yeah, I do like the versatility of these whips, though, that they have the dagger bit that comes out the bottom, too, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that Indiana Jones needs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That way he could, like, spike into the ground anytime he's about to fall in somewhere. Oh, no, thank God you have your whip, Indy. I mean, I see the whips, and I'm just like, that is such a silly weapon to choose. But I guess they make it look badass?
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it looks kind of... I remember thinking on first watch that it was kind of, it seemed kind of unique.
Yeah.
Kind of cool that these guys would just be, like, whip enthusiasts.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it's kind of like how I've never quite understood nunchucks.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, you know, like when it comes to the Ninja Turtles, it's like, well, two of them are carrying blades, one of them's carrying a big heavy stick, Why? What about, you know, the one with the swinging things? Like, I don't know. They just seem like silly weapons. But if they're used properly, oh my god, you know? Yeah, no, that is a very cool bar fight as well. Like, I liked even the bit where Travis is trying to run away and he ejects the clip in the gun to make him slip and fall again. You know, it's just, I like how there's all that extra stuff going on around it. Is not only is he trying to fight off these guys, but he is also trying to, like, capture Travis at the same time.
Yeah.
One thing I also noticed about this movie is the filmmakers really like to zoom out so you can see the scale of everything. But the effect is a little off. Like, did you notice that? Like, there's the bit where he's like, you know, he's showing the mine, the strip mine happening, and then it zooms out to show how big the mine is. And then once they get away from in this fight, there's another one where we see the Jeep and Beck and Travis are driving along, and then it zooms out and then zooms out again just to show you the scale of the forest or the jungle around them. But it's,
yeah, I felt like the mine one just looked bad because it looked like terrible CGI almost. Like,
yeah.
It reminded me of, like, the Alistair Sim, like, Screwed, when they have the scene of showing all the, like, ghosts trying to, like, interact with the human world. Like, I don't know. They could have put a little bit more money into that.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, made the scale just slightly smaller. So...
yeah. Or, like, yeah, did more of a close up on people actually working in the mine and being in pain or whatever.
Yeah. But yeah, no, they're like, no, we want to show it all. And so they're driving along, and then this is where Travis ends up, like, kicking him so that the Jeep will, you know, tumble down the cliff. And this fall, I mean, my God, how many times would they have died on the way down?
Yeah, I gotta say, like, I don't think that, like, for Travis, on Travis's part, there's just no way that you could possibly know. Like, if you're gonna make a move like that, you have to think that your chance of survival is 100%.
Yeah.
And in this situation, it's like 25.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you can't tell me he's done that before. I don't know. But it does look pretty cool.
Yeah.
Right.
And then they get to the bottom, right? And then he has trouble containing Travis. Yet, meanwhile, we've seen him take out an entire defensive line and a bar full of whip boys. And he can't handle this one guy. Is it like the theory that Andre the Giant has in The Princess Bride? Hey, there's another one that converted well. Come on, Princess Bride, Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
But, you know,
yeah, yes.
Is it the same theory that fighting a group of people is easier than one-on-one battle?
Well, you also have to sympathize with Beck. Like, he's had a long day of, like, traveling on a shitty biplane in what I assume is what I assume is a very hot climate.
Yeah.
For a job that he thought was going to be really easy, but now has gone completely sideways. Mm-hmm. He's on no sleep, Jerry, no sleep. And, you know, I'll give him a little sympathy on this one.
Yeah, that's great. And of course, we've got the, you know, the pee scene, which, I mean, come on, it was still kind of funny. The unzip me. But yeah. you never see him wiggling it back in, though.
It's just out.
Yeah. They both get snared. Like, the monkey should end up humping him because it should still be out.
Yeah.
or even when he, like, gets his arms, like, because that's the point where he gets his arms underneath him first before he goes to... They should have just added a zipper sound effect. That's all I'm thinking. But yes. But we get monkeys humping them. Established dominance.
Would that have helped? Because maybe that monkey might be into that kind of stuff. You never know.
Oh, yes. There you go. That might just be feeding into what it wants. So the rebels get them down, and Travis messes with him because Beck does not speak Portuguese, and he ends up fighting the rebel leader, which is a very old Ernie Reyes Jr., who was in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze. He was the pizza delivery guy in that movie.
Oh, I knew that guy looked familiar.
Yeah, but now he's all shaved head and shirtless and oiled up, and you know, you wouldn't know it was him.
Yeah. I didn't really understand what his deal was.
Yeah.
Like, I get that Sean William Scott was kind of, like, saying whatever, but...
Yeah, yeah,
just... they seem to come on really, really aggressive.
Just keep eye contact with him, yeah. So, just look at him really intensely. Yeah, I don't know, but it turns out, though, that after all this wire fighting scene, which was a cool fight scene, I'd have to say... But Mariana shows up, and twist! Oh my god, she's the leader of the rebels. Were you expecting that, Frank?
No. No, I was not. I was trying to figure out how she would come back into the movie, but I didn't think it was going to be that. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so now the rebels all respect them, and they start talking about Ali. Who would win in a fight, Tyson or Ali? Do you guys agree with the assessment that it would be Ali?
I really have to think about it now.
I agree with his assessment, but I'd also caveat it with like the fact that, you know, Tyson just needs one good punch.
Like
Tyson at his prime just needed one lucky hit.
Yeah.
And then all the like tactics in the world could have just gone for shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
I was going to say that, like, credit to 2003 for having a female protagonist that just doesn't serve solely as just being a love interest for one of the male characters.
Not a love interest at all.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
if you thought something was going to happen. Yeah.
Nothing. I was a bit surprised by that, honestly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she doesn't end up being the toughest. There are still some points where she's a little damsel in distressy. But right. she is a pretty solid female character, and you're right. Good job 19 years ago.
it's mind-boggling to think that the rundown is going to be 20 years old next year.
Right? Yeah.
That makes me feel so old.
So they make the deal that Mariana will be taken to the Gato, and then she's going to show them how to get back to the plane so that he can take Travis home. And they go to the waterfall, and we get the whole warning of the parasite that can swim up your ding-dong, so don't urinate in the water. But why does Travis take his shirt off to swim to the waterfall, only to put it back on when they find the cave? Like, it's not like he took it off to keep it dry or anything. Like, if he had stuffed it into a Ziploc bag, that I'd understand. But he, like, tied it around his waist or whatever. Like, why'd you bother taking it off?
You gotta protect yourself from the parasite, man.
Oh, so it was, it was an extra diaper around the crotch. Okay.
No, probably not. But that's just the first thing that came to mind.
So,
like, I thunk that literally just now.
Yeah, yeah. So now the movie turns into Indiana Jones for a little bit because they manage to get through all the rickety wooden beams splintering around them. It's an unusual booby trap, but is the rock holding up the entire cave?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I got.
Okay.
That's what I got.
Okay. Because it's like, you know, at this point, Travis is going through, but like Mariana isn't even helping hold things up. Like, she's taking the beams away or whatever. But it's like, you know, he's holding up the entire cave then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
It's almost as if the rundown was like it's like a spiritual prequel to Professor Smolder Bravestone.
So, Professor Smolder Bravestone.
In Jumanji.
Oh, in Jumanji. Right. Oh, my God. And this movie was called Welcome to the Jungle at one point. So.
Yeah. It all comes back around.
Yeah. So they get El Gato, and Mariana gives them Con Labos fruit and ends up paralyzing them. However, I did look it up. Con Labos is not a real fruit. The fruits that were used were actually cherimoya, or also called custard apple. And apparently they have a very smooth, you know, subtly sweet texture. However, the seeds could have effects. Like, if you ate too much of the seed, it can have some paralyzing effects. But it is apparently a very delicious fruit. And they did not eat nearly enough of seed. Like, you would have to eat a lot of seed to have any kind of toxic effect. So, there you go. Conlabos, not a real fruit. In case you wanted to go around paralyzing people.
Rats.
Yeah.
Conlabos, the new date rape drug.
Yeah. Yeah. So, while they're lying on the ground paralyzed with the fire to keep the animals away and yada, 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 it cuts back to Hatcher's men looking for everybody. But, like, a whole day has passed. This leads me to believe that these guys have been driving around in the jungle for the last 24 hours. Like, you never see them
Hatcher's
refuel.
Men?
Yeah, Hatcher's men. Because it just cuts to them, like, driving through a field again. You know, that the very famous Hawaii field that has been in so many movies. Like the scene in Jurassic Park where they're running away from the dinosaurs happened in the same field as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I wonder if anyone's ever done like a super cut of
all the times you've seen the field. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, that's what it leads me to believe, though, is that these guys have just been driving around the jungle. You know, there's no gas stations in the jungle. Like,
Yeah, it's beyond reason. We'll have to just let that one go.
So while they're paralyzed, we get the return of the monkeys, of course. But luckily, that's when the effects start wearing off. And they get back to the plane and find out that Mariana has been captured by Hatcher. And so they decide that, well, they got to go rescue her. And we get another drop of the option A, option B thing. And of course, Hatcher makes the wrong choice. So they lock down the town. And oh my god, this closing fight, so much fun. I mean, first we release the bulls, and then he comes, or sorry, the bagpipes first, and then the bulls. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what this movie really has going for it, is the fight scenes, I think. There's every single one is a hit.
Yeah. The club fight is awesome.
The fight against the rebels with all the wire work, even though it's kind of weird and unnecessary, is still a lot of fun. And then this whole end thing is just like, it reminds me of like the final level of a video game where it's just you pull out all the stops.
Yeah. And, you know, and then of course, you know, I like how Mr. No Guns is using all the discarded rifles as clubs instead of guns, you know, things like that.
Right.
But of course, like it was foreshadowed earlier with the conversation of I pick up guns and very bad things happen. Well, The Rock needs to pick up a gun to save Travis, and very bad things happen. Interestingly, Very Bad Things was director Peter Berg's first feature film. Yeah, so I don't know whether this line, because he was also one of the writers, I don't know whether it was put in there as an Easter egg about his movie, but yeah. Very Bad Things,
What is Very Bad Things about?
Is it about
a guy with gun problems?
No, it's a dark comedy. It's got, I think it's Cameron Diaz, and I don't even remember who else. But yeah, it was a dark comedy. I've only seen it once, and I don't remember it that well, obviously. But yeah, I just thought that was a fun bit of trivia. But we end up getting into... the fight in there is a fight that happens in one of the convenience stores there, and I couldn't help but notice that on the wall of the convenience store was a poster for Nest Tea, and I think that means it's time for sponsorship corner.
I was actually trying to figure out when we were going to get to that.
Yep.
Because yeah, I was thinking about it when we started. I was like, wait, where? Where does that show up?
Yeah, well,
it's always a mystery. Sometimes it's like sometimes it stresses me out when it's been too long, and I feel like I need to personally take it upon myself to find a way to get Sean an opening.
Yeah,
but you can always trust that no matter what, he'll find his way.
That's right. Sometimes even without a segue. No, I could have gone in with the clubs because a lot of the football players were wearing name brand shit. You know, I could have gone in with the bar. This one was a tricky one, though, because they tried to be authentic Brazilians. So a few of them, it's kind of like, okay, maybe that's a thing. Mm-hmm. So always on the lookout for product placements and movies. This week, the rundown is brought to you by Kangol, Rolex, Nike, Nestlé, Dodge, and Jeep. Now, the Jeep, it gets name dropped so many times. Like Declan's like, where's my Jeep? Where's my Jeep? But you never actually see any signage on the Jeep. But obviously it's a Jeep. So I'm counting that one. Also brought to you by Brasilia Coffee, Xingu Beer, that's X-I-N-G-U, and Brahma Beer, plus whatever the fuck Hatcher's company is named. Did either of you catch the name?
No.
Yeah, like it's on all their jumpsuits or whatever, but...
We'll just go with the...
Hatcher Co.
Cornelius Hatcher Mining Company.
There we go. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. So now, you know, the other thing we discover is, thankfully we saw that in the club, The Rock is capable of punching through concrete pillars, because there is the moment where, to get the guys that are sniping from the tower, he leaps across a big opening and takes out the brick pillars with his shoulder.
Yeah, and elbows.
And elbows,
strikes
yeah.
me as a... joint injury for sure.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Just starts punching out the entire support structure of this tower.
I mean, yeah. The one drawback I will say of early Dwayne Johnson movies is I felt like, and you can kind of see it watching them now, is because he was a wrestler, it's almost like they felt a real need to put in wrestling moves into his like fight scenes,
yeah,
as if to say like that like any wrestling fan would be watching, like, oh, look, he's still doing it, like it's still wrestling. Whereas I'm just kind of like, have a little bit more respect and faith in us.
Well, how much of that do you think is executive producer Vince McMahon being like, no, if you're doing this, you're using your wrestler name and your yeah, and you're gonna do the people's elbow at some point.
I'm curious.
I did notice him doing the rock bottom at one point.
Yeah,
or at least a variant close to.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure if you really look at The Rock's action movies specifically, there isn't a movie where he doesn't do the rock bottom.
Yeah,
like he even does it in The Fast and the Furious, where he fights Jason Statham, he rock bottoms Jason Statham through a glass table.
Okay.
But
I forgot about that.
Well, I don't remember seeing a people's eyebrow in this movie, though.
No people's eyebrow. There was a people's eyebrow in Scorpion King, for sure.
Yeah. Wasn't there also a CGI one?
Yeah. I'm curious to know how much influence Vince McMahon might have had. Like, I almost think his producership is more for just like almost lending them the rock, but this is pre like WWE films, and I know like later movies featuring WWE wrestlers were sometimes like they got funding from WWE films to make the movie, but this one seems like mostly just solely produced by or distributed at least by Universal, right?
It's like when they give a random celebrity a doctorate at a university. It's just ceremonial, this executive producership, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've learned about producer, like, being a producer varies to, like, you just threw some dollars at the movie to, like, you had an actual hand in like, actually producing and, like, creating stuff. But it seems to me, a lot of times, being a producer or an executive producer is just more like an honorarium than any actual, like, that you had any real impact on the movie, other than just kind of, like, knowing somebody or, like, giving an okay to something.
It's almost like some of these executive producers are just brands. Like Jerry Bruckheimer. Oh, it's a Jerry Bruckheimer production. Okay, he just puts his stamp on it, but his people do all the work.
Yeah, like, I'm sure that, like, you know, any movie made by Lucasfilm, for example. Like, George Lucas probably listed as a producer whether or not he had anything to do with that movie or not, you know? Like, that type of thing.
Yeah, that's totally fair. So after all the town gets, like, completely, like, you know, smashed up and everything like that, we end up with the final Whip Boys standoff, where we've got three of them all circling the rock at the same time. So is this the whip scene, or is the other one the whip scene? Which one is your favorite of the whip scenes?
I like this one solely for the little, like, push-up move that the Rock does in it to dodge the one whip that comes under.
Yeah.
I remember thinking that was super cool. Also, this is where they pull out the knives and go try to go for the stab, but they weren't expecting... they weren't expecting the Rock to have guns. I also do like the scene where he has that little six shooter that they whip out of his hand. I think that might be the one actual legitimate whip stunt.
Yeah. And then we also get to see our man John Grease again, but this time he's wearing a scorpion necklace, which is the same necklace that is worn in The Scorpion King.
Oh.
Yeah. So a fun little Easter egg there as well. Like, this movie, if you really think about it, is chock full of Easter eggs. Like, yeah. I'm surprised I didn't catch any American Pie references.
Mm-hmm. Nobody made a joke about Travis's mom.
That's right. Exactly. That's what it needed. Because everywhere else...
they just needed a one side-eye shot of Beck being like, "I'll sleep with your mother."
Yeah.
And just a little wink to the camera.
Yeah. They call me Finch.
Yeah.
I glowed up.
Why don't you just go fuck a pie?
Oh, see, there we go. I mean, if the actual fruit is called like apple custard or whatever I said it was, it could have been like warm apple pie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so finally Hatcher enters the phrase. He ends up getting shot in the stomach and killed, you know, but I like the, you know, option B is still on the table. And of course, you know, we get Christopher Walken being Christopher Walken but dying in the middle of the street.
Good.
Yeah.
Good ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I like the Declan start the plane and we get the call back to no brakes. I'm sorry, like, I don't care. And we get back home and he decides to use the paralyzing fruit on Billy and everyone else that's there.
And, yeah, I like that part.
But the one thing I want to know about that is, like, before he gives him the fruit, he wants to make sure, like, my debt is clear, right, Billy? You know, but
yeah,
come on.
That didn't make any sense because, like, how can you honestly believe, like, you're just going to take his word for it?
Yeah.
And also, like, how are you getting your money? How are you getting your $250,000? You think he's just going to be like, ah, ha, 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 like, you got me, but here's your money. Well played, kid.
Wasn't that what was in the duffel bag that he takes out? I thought he carries a black duffel bag.
Oh, maybe. That's right. Here I am, stupid in, like, 2020, thinking, like, oh, he's just going to e-transfer him. So.
Yeah. Some sort of, like, you know, offshore bank account, you know, untraceable, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cayman Islands. But, yeah, like, seriously, like, is this gentleman's agreement going to be enough to keep him from coming after you? Just because, hey, I walked him through that door. There's the technicality that we're shaking on right now, Billy.
Mm-hmm.
But we get one last funny little moment of Travis doing his Mr. Thunder and Mr. Lightning thing. And then, just kidding, I'll be in the truck. And the end. That is the rundown. Now, Colin Frank on IMDb, it scored 6.6 out of 10, has a Metascore of 59. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 69% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 66%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like the largest tumble ever down the side of a mountain, hit us with some reviews.
Rotten Tomatoes reviewer Joel H. gives the movie 3.5 out of 5 stars and says, "I liked the rundown a lot back when I first saw it.
Years down the road, it's still entertaining, even if it's not the knee-slapping, rip-roaring good time it used to be. The pairing of The Rock and Sean William Scott is a surprisingly good mix for comedy, but the story is a little undercooked and the action is fairly choppy. I still enjoy it, though. I may not recommend it as highly as I used to.
Maybe that guy did a good job of summing up what I was trying to say in the beginning. With just choppy, right? Like, the action was choppy because it was action scene, then exposition. Action scene, exposition, you know? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
Anthony F. gives the movie 1.5 out of 5 stars and says, "At the end of this movie, I wanted to kill Sean William Scott. Is that how you create a comedic duo? By one of the characters being so unlikable that you want them off the screen for the rest of the movie? His lame facial expressions, stupid accents, and generally infantile behavior are not comedic gold. The Rock is very entertaining, and the movie would have been better if he had never found Scott in the jungle and just did the movie with Rosario Dawson. The fight scenes are so comically choreographed they are not satisfying and certainly cannot carry the movie. A waste of Christopher Walken's talents."
Okay. I wouldn't say that.
Yeah, that's a bit harsh.
Yeah.
Aaron B. gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, "One of those underrated gems that is just plain fun. If you don't enjoy this movie for its fun-loving spirit, I think you're kind of weird. Dwayne Johnson and Sean William Scott are very enjoyable as a duo, and I'm one of those peeps who still would love to see Sean William Scott pop up more as a supporting actor and stuff. He is a talented actor who got typecasted, but he still has the chops, and you see his comedic timing and energy shine through in The Rundown." I agree with that guy. I couldn't help but feel in this movie that, like, Sean William Scott is Chris Pratt before Chris Pratt.
Yeah, okay. I get that.
They're just, like, they're so similar. I feel like everything that, like, makes it, like, if you were to do an alternate MCU casting, I think you could make a good case, like, 2003 Sean William Scott could easily have just, like, slid into Star-Lord.
Yeah. He could be a Johnny Fantastic, too. I mean...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or Johnny Storm. Johnny Storm.
Johnny Storm, yeah.
Yeah.
Jacob B. gives the movie 4 out of 5 stars and says, "The Rundown is a quite fun action comedy that attracted relatively little attention when it first came out because this was released at a time when The Rock wasn't going by Dwayne Johnson, and so this was dismissed as a generic action flick whose main selling point is that a wrestler is the lead actor. Years later, I consider this movie to be an underrated entry in The Rock's filmography. It's not heavy on character development or originality, but the actors do a good job. Where else can you claim that Dwayne Johnson and Christopher Walken starred in the same movie together? There are a few amusing, if not too noteworthy, laughs, and the action sequences are really good. I think I like this movie virtually for all the action sequences alone. All in all, Hobbs and Shaw, I mean The Rundown, is an overlooked movie that offers all the fun action viewers would expect from a movie starring Dwayne Johnson, and even some treasure hunting adventure."
Hobbs and Shaw, that was clever.
Yeah. I agree with, I mean, it is kind of mind-blowing to me that The Rock and Christopher Walken were in the movie together.
Yeah. But, I mean, so was Christopher Walken and Kid Rock. Joe Dirt, baby.
Which, oh.
All right.
That's right.
Yes, that is true.
That didn't even cross my mind. And I thought The Rock and Christopher Walken being in the same movie was interesting.
So, like I said, 6.6 into 66 from audiences and 69 and 59 from critics. Let's throw it over to Frank first. Frank, your first viewing of this movie. What'd you think?
Yes. And you know, for a first viewing, I enjoyed it. I really didn't think it was that bad. Yeah. I will say this. I was a bit disappointed thinking that there would be more comedy in it than I thought there was.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy it. It was very action-y. Dwayne Johnson does a great job, and so does Sean William Scott, and so does Christopher Walken, for that matter. Rosario Dawson, too. I didn't even realize that was her at first.
Yeah.
It took me a while to get it. But yeah, I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, like, what a wild career Rosario Dawson has had because of the, like, you know, now she's, you know, Daredevil and
Clerks 3.
Well, yeah, Ahsoka, and you know, Ahsoka, but even by throwing Clerks 3 in there, that does show like just how varied it is, you know.
Yeah, I like Rosario Dawson quite a bit. I think she's not only a great actress, but she strikes me as the type of famous person who I think would just be cool to hang out with.
Yeah.
Like, she just seems like a nice person.
Yeah, she'd want to sit down and have a beer with you. Yeah.
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 And you really get that vibe by watching this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, Frank, if you had to, like, you know, give it a, I don't know, some sort of rating or a thumbs up or thumbs down, like, you know, this is a recommendable viewing, you'd say?
I'd say. Yeah. I'd say on a 4-star scale, probably 3 stars, just because I kind of anticipated a bit more comedic aspects.
Yeah.
I feel like it would have helped the film a bit better in a way, but it is good. I like it.
Yeah. Right on. Colin, what about you? Still love this movie?
Yeah, I almost think, like, I was like, man, why haven't I watched this movie in however long? It's still very enjoyable.
Yeah.
And like I said, I still think it's one of The Rock's best. I found Christopher Walken, I mean, I think this about any movie I ever see him, but the guy is just so fascinating to watch. Yeah. Like, I can't...
Oh, for sure.
I can't take my eyes off him when he's talking. It's just, everything is so good.
You know, you and I need to sit down and watch some early Christopher Walken sometime. Like, yeah. You know, I'm talking like we need to go, like, sit down and watch The Deer Hunter or something like that, which is like 70s Christopher Walken. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen, like, the oldest Christopher Walken I've probably seen is Batman Returns. I don't know that I've seen him in anything before that.
Yeah. But I remember one movie called Suicide Kings that I really liked him in. And Johnny Galecki was in that movie as well. And he's like a mob boss that, like, these guys decide to kidnap and hold hostage. And a bit of another little dark comedy, little indie movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I think at the end of the day, like, I see kind of what you guys are saying about the choppiness of the movie. But I don't know, the reviewers are saying, but for me, I don't know. It's just like, to me, it's just such an easy watch to me. And I really like that. I really like movies like that, where it's just kind of like, you can just put it on, watch it, have a good time, and then go about your business. Like,
yeah, I mean, like, the only
nothing about it is too involved. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like, the only reason I bring up the inconsistency of the tone at times is only because with the show, I'm watching it with a much more critical eye. Like, this movie for me was also, it was an early pandemic watch. So I've watched this movie recently. I watched it within the last 2 years before watching it this. And I was just as happy to sit down this time to watch it, you know, because I'm like, okay, here we go. You know, last time I watched it for fun, this time I put on my, you know, yeah, but what about this glasses, which I like to put on with this show, you know?
I mean, I honestly can't believe that they haven't done a sequel to it. I remember when this movie came out, I thought that this would be a franchise.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that Sean William Scott would return every time, but just that, like, you know, the character of
Beck
and The Rock, I think, it just, and the whole idea of the, like, bounty hunter aspect and this, like, altruistic, you know, savior of the people, like, it just lends itself to, you know, at least a couple more movies.
Yeah, his restaurant fails and he has to get back in. Or Billy's after him!
Yes.
And even more so now that, like, The Rock has his, like, little buddy in Kevin Hart, like, you know, you want laughs, like, I feel like you could easily make a rundown, too, with Kevin Hart and...
Well, I remember reading in one of the trivia sections I was going through that there was a planned sequel for A Rundown 2. They tried to get it going right away, but I think it's because it didn't turn a profit that they scrapped it.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
But The Rock was working on it, and I forget who it was, but exactly like you said, it wasn't going to be Sean William Scott coming back, but... Yeah, it wouldn't be Kevin Hart now.
I think I remember reading they were trying to get Jonah Hill, which kind of makes sense at the time, because that would have been like around 2006 when Superbad and all
accepted
that was...
and
that could have worked.
Okay, so I mean, for me, I'd say the same sort of thing. I still like this movie. It's, you know, it's up there, and it is one of the better Rock movies. And Frank, I urge you to watch Walking Tall, because Walking Tall, at least going into that one, don't expect a comedy, because that was The Rock trying to do something serious. I mean, Walking Tall is a remake of an older movie. I forget who was in that one, So that's what he was trying to do, the grittier remake. Let's, you know, let's try to make this a serious movie. But it is also, yeah, early Rock is solid.
Mm-hmm.
Early yeah. Rock solid. Solid Rock solid entertainment, as the tagline solid. Says.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there we go. That's the rundown, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, a big huge thank you to our buddy Frank Driscoll. Frank, you have retired your podcast, unfortunately, but if you want to direct people to your social media, where can they find you?
Well, I will say this, I've retired that podcast. I would like to get back to something more in the future. I just gotta find something, you know, that goes with the flow. Anywho, you can follow me at Frank W. Driscoll on Instagram and Twitter as well. And another thing, something that I've been doing, if you live in the Point Richmond area, you can see me at the Up and Under Pub and Grill every Tuesday night from 7 to 9, hosting Trivia Night through King Trivia. Something I do every week now. It's a fun little quiz. If you're living in that area, you can find me there every Tuesday.
Are you
asking questions, which is very well on my way to my lifelong ambition of hosting a television game show. So it's a start. But
I was going to say, are you harnessing your inner Alex Trebek?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
So now,
very much so, yes.
With your trivia, do you do like theme nights, or is it just like kind of a basic trivia?
We do have themed rounds. I do know that certain bars and pubs around the country often do theme nights. You could check on kingtrivia.com to see where your local trivia night is located. And you might find a theme night there. And I've also been to a couple locations around the Oakland area and other places. So you might see me not just in the Point Richmond, but somewhere else. And you could also provide a private event through them. If you have a wedding or birthday coming up and you want to have a special trivia night for that, you can do that as well.
Oh, that would be neat. You could cater it to the couple.
Yes.
Well, right on. Thanks for joining us, Frank.
My pleasure.
If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is, well, tell people. Share our posts. Word of mouth is the lifeblood of a podcast trying to get noticed in that huge sea of shows out there. Or if you want to go above and beyond, go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcasts on and give us some stars. Doesn't matter what you say in any reviews. It just helps drive us up the charts, helps us get noticed. Spotify is super simple to give us stars, and you don't even have to type anything. It's awesome. Or if you want to go even further above and beyond, you can become a producer of the show. And you can donate to us. Just go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. Become part of our Patreon community and get a shout out because you're now an executive producer, just like Joshua Blum.
And check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. Find links to all of our social media, as well as our podcast episodes. And if you want to let us know what movies you used to like and see if we'll talk about them on the show, then drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. And if you want to hear more from me, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. Thanks for listening, and join us next week when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One. Right on.
Awesome.
Yes. Another one in the can. Ugh. Yeah, no, Walking Tall is definitely worth checking out. I don't know, maybe
I will now.
Yeah, maybe we get you back for Walking Tall at some point in the future. Okay, well, right on, Frank.
And, yeah, thanks, guys.
We're going to say goodbye to you. And then...
All right, it's always great coming. Thanks, guys, man.
Oh, we love having you, buddy.
Okay. Yeah, man. Come back anytime.
Yeah.
All right. I'll see you guys for Scrooge.
Yeah, we'll see you in a couple months. Right. That's what we have to figure out now.
Okay.
Cool.
All right, I'll see you guys.